has a headache. Typical headache case. And you are on Shabbos, and the doctor tells you Advil cold and sinus is going to do wonders for you. Is it mutter usser? Second case, skin rash. This is a very common occurrence. Let's say a simple fungal skin rash. Very common type thing. It happens to babies. What would be the din there? It could happen to a teenager or a young adult. And it could happen to an immunocompromised person. The shaila is the same rash, but the psak in each one of those three cases you'll see is quite different. Look at that. What if somebody has painful muscular pain, painful joint pain, and it's Shabbos? With two scenarios. In one scenario, they have the ointment. There's an ointment, let's say, that the doctor prescribed or that's available in the house, and that would treat the pain. Can you do that on Shabbos? And let's say you don't have it, can you have somebody, let's say a guy or somebody else, go get it for you? The next case is a very popular issue these days. An adult is diagnosed with the flu. And there is no definitive treatment for the flu, but there's something called Tamiflu. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, which is felt very strongly to lessen the severity of the flu and to shorten the course. Can somebody, let's say, who, and this is the case that happened, person was diagnosed with the flu, they didn't have the Tamiflu on them, but their neighbor, presumably the person they caught the flu from, I don't know, right? They had the Tamiflu. And it's a makom she'ein erev. There's no erev in the place. What can they do to facilitate taking that Tamiflu for their illness? How far can they go? Let's say there's access to a guy. Let's say there's not access to a guy. Next case is a case of a person who, the real case was not that interesting to you, person who had some type of inflammation around their heart, but not an emergency thing. They were being treated at home. And the one thing they needed was sort of to be monitored with a blood test. So they had to get a blood test. There was an arrangement made for a guy to come and draw the blood. Is there any problem with the Jew whose blood is being drawn facilitating the drawing of the blood? Right? We'll assume Amir Lenachri is definitely mutter in this case, but is there any problem? Does the Jew have to kind of make it tough on the guy drawing the blood? The last thing you want to do, right? Or are you allowed to do everything you can, you know, pump up your vein, facilitate taking the blood? Is there any problem of Mesayeya when it comes to the Isurim of Amir Lenachri on Shabbos? Does Mesayeya make it worse? What about a very common issue, constipation, in an adult and in a 2 to 3 year old child? Any difference between the way we'd approach that? What are we allowed to do? What are the heterim? What are the Isurim? Somebody who has a history of asthma, diabetes, some other chronic illness, and feels pretty good, is really walking around Kibari like he's totally healthy, but senses something's coming on, feels a little something brewing. How much leeway is there and what can be done for that individual? What about a person, we're up to number 10, so we're getting to the end of these. Person who has depression or anxiety and takes medication for that. Is there any hesitation to give that on Shabbos? Or other interventions that you might need to do for a person in that condition? How about, here's two actual cases that happened very recently. It seems that a lot of sore throats occur immediately Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos starts. So here was a teenage young man who complained of a sore throat. They rushed him to the doctor just before Shabbos. The doctor did a throat culture, and what they commonly will do is they'll call your house the next day, and if it's Shabbos, they'll call, they'll just speak on the answering machine, and they hear the next day that it's positive. The kid himself feels okay. He's not really sick at all at this point. But you know it's strep, but he's really like in the category of a michush ba'alma. He's not categorized in terms of how he feels as a chola. He's not mitzta'ar really. We need to treat him. When someone's diagnosed with strep, you have a little leeway in the treatment. I'll tell you, medically speaking, there's no emergency that there's going to be some great sakana that'll occur if you don't treat them within 24 hours. But is there anything you could do? Let's say you want to get the treatment started. If you do start it, he will feel better sooner, and you could stave off more significant symptoms. Are you allowed to get a nachri under those conditions to go and get your medication? Certainly you can't be mechallel Shabbos deraisa, but could you do a mirla nachri? Where would we categorize a person like this? And in the other case, which is probably even more common, you go in on the Friday for the sore throat. The doctor looks at the throat and he says, ooh, that looks suspicious. I think this is, we're going to call this a clinical strep. Does the throat culture, never calls you with the results, but he was suspicious, he recommended you should start the medication right away. You get the medication like immediately before Shabbos, but you don't really start it or are thinking of starting it on Shabbos. You have no knowledge that this is a strep. It may be strep, it might not be. And he feels pretty much like the other guy. Not too bad. What would be the psak under conditions like that? Sounds like a far-fetched case, but it's actually fairly common. How about somebody who needs an injection, an IM injection, or a subcutaneous injection? So to put an IV in, and I'm sure Rabbi Sobolevsky covered this, an IV is certainly an issur d'oraisa, almost according to everybody. To place an IV, it's definitely a chabur, it's definitely a maisa, it's a malacha. An intramuscular or subcutaneous injection is not the same thing. And the question is it clearly an issur d'rabbanan? And if it is, how much leeway do we have? Let's say somebody, kind of case this would be, is somebody is brought to the emergency room and they need stitches or they need some kind of local anesthetic for some reason. Do we tell them to grin and bear it and avoid the injection, or it's not going to be a problem at all?
What's the difference between an IV and an injection?
So an IV is one where you're going to be...
Halachically, not medically.
But one's a malacha d'araisa, chabura.
Okay, I guess. So why
you need to hear what it is, right? So if you take, by definition, a chabura is going to be if you, with intention, right, draw out blood. There's no such thing as placing an IV without purposefully drawing out some blood to know where you are, right, to make sure that you're in the vein. So every starting of an IV minimally involves purposeful drawing out of blood. It's an interesting discussion. It's not really our topic because it's really in the Cholash Yishpasa kind of realm. There is an interesting discussion Sitz Eliezer has about whether really that could be considered fully a malacha tzricha legufa, the drawing out of the blood. It gets into a whole issue that has to do with Hilchos Nida. It's a very interesting discussion that he has. But Lamaisa, everybody really holds that it's got to be considered at least Issur d'oraisa, most likely to be. There's that one little way out of it that you might say somehow it's a malacha tzricha legufa, because you're not really keeping the blood. It's not like drawing the blood for a test. So that's mamish, really a full-fledged malacha. Right here, just drawing out the blood to see that you're in, so it's a whole little pill, but at the end of the day, the maskana is that it is a Issur d'oraisa. When it comes to an IM injection, the metzius is different. What happens in an IM injection is you take a needle, right? Everyone's got a shot, right? Right? The thing you used to dread when you went to the pediatrician. Goes into the muscle. Is that, certainly there is no kavana to draw blood, right? So it's a davar shein miskaven. Is it a psik reisha? If it is a psik reisha, which is debated, right? Let's say that you'll see, I think in Shmiras Shabbos Klichosa, even when he discusses IM injections, he'll mention it's a davar shein miskaven. It's not a psik reisha even. In my personal experience, I've never seen blood, not drawn a little bit of blood. But either way, if it is a psik reisha, it's only going to be a psik reisha de lo nichale. Any blood that's caused by that process is going to make the injection of whatever you're injecting in, it's a negative for it. It's not just lo nichpasle, it's like de lo nichale, bichlal. You don't really want this. So the question becomes, are you doing any kind of issur d'oraisa? Is it possibly you're making a Pesach? No, because certainly you're just going in, you're not looking to have things come out. And the other possibility to consider it some type of issur d'rabbanan is there's an issur refuah, right? So at most, it's an issur d'rabbanan by all those things. It's either a psik reisha de lo nichale, so it's an issur d'rabbanan that way. It's either totally a davar shein miskaven, but it's a pesach lo hachnis shelo lahotzi. Either way, an IM injection at most is going to be an issur d'rabbanan, and an IV is an issur d'oraisa all the way because of that blood that you're taking out in the beginning. So the nafkamina is going to be, in a cholash ein basakana, you can't just start an IV. That's for sure. What about drawing blood? You'll see, we will touch upon that also, right? Strictly speaking, to draw blood on a cholash ein basakana is going to be aser, right? Because you can't do a daraisa for cholash ein basakana. So we'll have to see if there's any exceptions to that. For example, what a case that will be relevant from the realm of Chalashi Yishpas HaKana, right? I don't know if Rabbi Sobolevsky spoke about this, but there's a whole discussion when it comes to Chalashi Yishpas HaKana, and you're going to be Matir, obviously, everything for something that relates to the Sakana directly. Any type of intervention, treatment, investigation that will help relieve the Sakana. What if you're going to do something to a Cholashi Yishpas HaKana, but it's not really going to be doing anything directly for him? It's what we call an ancillary test, an ancillary treatment. Something that is not mamish going to be affecting the sakana. So there is a strong shita based on the Magid Mishnah, of Adi Yosef. There's a whole little mahalach that's mutter also. You could do to a chalish yishba sakana the main things that affect the sakana. You can even do the ancillary needs, but many people don't pask in that way. Instead, and you'll see this in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, they're put into a different category. They're put into a category, we treat even a cholashi yesh basakana, when it comes to ancillary needs, we'll treat that like a cholashi ein basakana. So any case that we talk about, or any mahalach, halachic approach, we talk about by a cholashi ein basakana, will apply, according to these poskim, to a cholashi yesh basakana for those ancillary needs. We'll try to give an example of that also. One final thing, what about sakanas eiver? So here we'll see that's an independent category. And what if you have a case where, and this just came up recently, that's why I'm putting it into our mix as the final case, somebody was in a situation where they had a need, they had a scar, or a potential scar, if they didn't get stitches. And the issue was that there was no real danger, there was no sakana. The only thing that would come out if you didn't do it right, if you didn't do it in the ideal way with the stitches, would there be this scar that might affect the functioning of his finger, right? It wouldn't be ibud ha-finger, right? It wouldn't be ibud ha-eiver. It would just be a chisaron in the flexibility of the finger. You know, if he was a virtuoso piano player, he wouldn't be as good, right? Or maybe even other things. Let's say we won't even make it a case like that. Let's say he would just not have the full functioning of his finger. What type of status? That rate, sakanes eiver, and put it into that higher category and allow for greater heterim. So that's the final case. Hopefully at the end of this, when is the end of this, by the way? Okay, so I'll try to watch the clock. Hopefully I won't leave you hanging with the answers. If I do, so the two options are you can like listen very attentively, figure out what to do, and I think all the answers are going to be what we're going to cover. Or call me anytime or approach me anytime. Okay, so if you turn to page one of the handout, we're going to go through this. I think it's ordered in a way that should be useful. So here, and again, I'm sure Rabbi Sobolevsky mentioned, the most significant starting point for all of Hilchas Cholim on Shabbos is categorization, right? What category they fit into. So I thought the Aruch HaShulchan provides the neatest, simplest, straightforward outline of the different categories, along with, really, the bottom line, Psak. So in Halacha Aleph, you have Pikuach Nefesh, Sakanas Nefashos. He makes a point that's important to emphasize that there's two types of Sakanas Nefashos. There's one that's Bahol, right? That's the one, there's no Shilas. That's the one you're a Shofech Damim if you hesitate. That's the one where all the great Musar in the Yerushalmi and other places falls onto. There you don't hesitate, you don't ask, you don't think, you just jump and you do. And I would assume, by the way, that everybody realizes that if you're ever involved in any kind of case where you're a Mesupak at all, is this a case of Sakana that's Bahul, that you obviously realize that then you treat it the same way. You just don't think, you just don't take any chances. Then there's another type of Sakana Stafashos that he points out that where there is room for Shilas, and that is probably the majority of the cases, because thank God most of the time we don't run into these real, honest to goodness, emergency cases, but there's many Sakana Stafashos cases. We'll see them in a minute, although we're not going to dwell on them to get really into the Cholash Eimel Sakana, but in those kind of cases, there should be more time. It's not as bahol. The din will be the same that you could be docha any isidar aisa. However, you could pause, possibly, according to, let's say, Shita Sarama, you could use a shinoi, or you should use a shinoi. You should use amir l'nachri, even if you know, it's more of a tircha to do it. Well, we won't talk about that. Hopefully Rabbi Sobolevsky talked about it a little. But those are the two categories within Pikuach Nefesh. What we're really going to be focused on here is Yud Zayin, Yud Ches, and Yud Tes, which is Yud Ches is Sakanas Eiver, and then as we just alluded to, we're going to define Sakanas Eiver as even a loss of function. We're going to see, right, it's Rav Chaim Na, the Ksos HaShulchan, is the one who's most explicit about this. Everyone should realize when we talk about Sakanas Eiver, it doesn't mean you're going to lose the arm, you're going to be amputated, or you're going to lose function completely, it means any relative loss of function, where the aver will not be as functional as it would be. You won't be hearing as well, chas v'shalom. You won't be using one of your limbs as well. All of those will constitute legitimate sakana saver. In Yud Zayin, he mentions cholish ein bel sakana. And in Yud Tes is michlish v'alma. So the real challenge for cholish ein bel sakana is the double categorization, meaning you have to have the challenge of making sure you're not dealing with sakanas tefashos. That will be challenge number one. And challenge number two is you're really dealing with a cholish ein bel sakana, not a michlish v'alma. That's what makes it, to some degree, the toughest one to categorize. So if you turn to page two, I have there the Shmir Shabbos Hilchos says list for Chol Shiyesh Basakana. I thought this could never be repeated too often. I'm always nervous about people, you know, especially very firm people, well-meaning, tzaddikim, who are very machmir about their self-categorization or categorization of their friends and family. You have to really, really be careful with this. And one should, again, I repeat, if there's doubt, is this a sakana or not, you go with it is a sakana. What I like about Shmir Shabbos in this list is it's very complete. He gives you a lot of categories or a lot of circumstances that fit into the category of what he would say is a vadei sakana, that a person should absolutely do everything that's necessary to take care of the situation. So in the first two, it's das rofe and chola. That's all inyan unto itself. How much you know, validity we give to the chola, we give them a lot. We know that a chola knows his own, obviously not on strictly medical issues, but on a sense of well-being. A person knows better than a doctor how well they feel, and it's a real reality. I've seen this myself, unfortunately, on two circumstances where I was called over to a situation where someone had asked a cardiologist. They thought they were having some type of odd pain in an arm. And they thought, you know, they just, for whatever reason, there was a cardiologist nearby, and they said, do you think that this is something serious? Should I go to the emergency room? And the doctor, based on the facts, and I would have agreed with him based on the facts, alone, let it go and said, no, you know, wait till after Shabbos. The person was still not feeling well, and then somehow I got involved. And I said to him, really, the thing I wanted to ask him, did you ever feel like this ever before in your life? He said, no, this is a unique feeling. He was complaining about a discomfort in his arm, and that was it. From his face and the way he was saying it, it was clear to me that there was something potentially very different about this that could very well be that he was having a heart attack, which unfortunately, it turned out, is exactly what was happening. So that was just one of the examples of driving home this idea, the chola's intuition about their sense of well-being is not just Chazal's wild idea. I think it has a lot of evidence in reality and in experience that it should be given a lot of credence. He then, in Yud Aleph, over here, the Shmir Shabbos goes through many other cases. Chom, which is going to be very important. Fever. Fever, again, is the funny controversy. I call it funny controversy because you see the poskim saying interesting things to each other, Lagabe the Sinyan. But the bottom line is, you know, what they all seem to conclude is really it's the doctor's call, which is very true, that fever, the height of it, is really not the most significant issue from a medical perspective. It's really the context, what's going on. It's something that a person who is not medically trained would never be able to draw a conclusion on. So I would say on fever, if you have any doubts that this could be something serious, you have to assume that it is. And therefore, the majority of fever cases will be treated, especially in children, but even in adults, they're going to be treated like a suffix sakana at least. There will be sometimes when you're positive, you know, you've had a cold for a few days, you've got a low-grade fever, where you're very comfortable as an individual, that it's not a mamish sakana, so that will be something that will be categorized as a chol shein bo sakana. But the majority of fever cases, I would be very liberal with personally. Next, he talks about any machlo within the body, any internal issue is certainly going to be a chol shein yesh bo sakana. Any open fracture, any deep cut with a metal that's potentially going to be infected or dirty, any type of infection that you see, this is one I really learned my lesson on. I went to see somebody in the neighborhood called me over, and I went to their house. The daughter had been rollerblading. I think she was due to get married not too long after this, and I guess it was the last hurrah. She went rollerblading and she fell down and scraped her knee. So, but it was a pretty bad scrape. So they called me over to look at it, and I said, "Ooh, that's a pretty bad scrape. What should we do?" So I said, "Okay, you know, like their question was, should we just clean it off, put a little ointment on it, and cover it?" So I said, "No, you know, I think it's a little worse than that. Let me run and get you some oral antibiotic, and we'll treat this with antibiotics." So I, in the time that I went from their house to the drugstore to get them the medication, and I'm talking 15 minutes, everything was moving fast, I came back, this little nothing infection had already begun to streak down her leg. It was incredibly rapid, which is very prevalent these days. That's why I'm actually bringing out this story. This is not an unusual, everyone who's certainly in the medical community is aware of this, but even non-medical people will have seen in the newspapers these new staph infections that are very virulent, very, very virulent. This was one of those. And she ended up in the hospital. When I came back and I saw that, I said, forget the oral antibiotic, let's go right to the emergency room. She ended up hospitalized for a few days and needed IV antibiotics. So always take infections of the skin seriously from the beginning, the onset of the infection. Never be cavalier about them.
What does it mean that the infection was streaking down the leg? What does it look like?
So it's actually, I was very impressed with the Shemir Shabbos in Os Tes. Petza shenimshach mimenu kav adom. So what's he talking about? He's talking about this thing I'm talking about, which is, it's an indication. What happens is you'll have, let's say, a little bruise, you know, a little scrape, and then you see a red line, or more than one, coming out of it. It's an immediate indication that this is a serious spreading and very rapidly spreading infection that nobody who knows what they're doing, lefianius daiti in medicine, would treat it with oral antibiotics or something like that. It's an immediate indication you need IV therapy, very serious. So like that type of tzimin, I was very happy. I think, you know, what he writes in the footnotes here, if I recall correctly, he was very sensitive to talking to doctors and when he made up this list. He wanted to throw in, he realizes people are going to be using their handy-dandy Shemir Shabbos to paskin the medical shiloh. So he was throwing in a lot of these medical issues very nicely. That was my agenda in putting it into this booklet. Then he has others. You can look at it yourself. You know, I don't have to read through all of them. But all the others are very important. Those are the ones that I think people mess up on. The rest are obvious. Person's unconscious. Person got poisoned. Person was bitten by a rabid animal. You know, we all realize that that's a sakana. Well, it depends on your agenda. It depends on the setting of the case. So an electric thermometer is an issa d'rabbanan. To measure temperature is technically an issa d'rabbanan, not b'makom chola, b'makom mitzvah. So the measurement of the temperature itself would be okay, right? Any thermometer. In the case of where you're assuming someone has fever or not have fever. So like if you're dealing, let's say you were dealing, it would be a case by case a little bit. Meaning like let's say you're dealing with an adult who's one of those michush ba'alma type adults who's just got a little cold. And you know that, let's say on Tuesday, would you be absolutely in need of taking the temperature? You feel a little warm? I feel a little warm. Is there any absolute necessity to know what the temperature is? If the answer to that question is no, which sometimes it is, but I would say most of the times it's not. Most of the times it does pay to know, especially with children. I'll say that right out. One thing a pediatrician never wants to hear if you call them, right, is that, oh yeah, I think he's warm. Right? Because they're always going to ask, is there a fever? And it's very mduyak if there's a fever or not. We want to know if there's a fever. Not if you feel he's a little warm. You didn't take the temperature, it becomes a whole little thing. I don't know if anyone's experienced it. Knows. I've experienced it when I've called a pediatrician, right? I say, he's warm. So what's the temperature? You know better. You know, I get a lecture. But it's true, because it's in those kind of cases, I would say, I don't care what kind of thermometer it is. It's not going to be a deraisa electrothermometer, right? Unless you have an incandescent light somehow in your thermometer, which I never heard of. So it'll still be at most a d'rabbanan. The ksiva is not going to be shakayama. There's not going to be a real issue that's deraisa. So I think most of the time it's going to be chalashim asakana. In fact, if there's suspicion of fever, it's chalashim asakana automatically, and it's going to be okay. That's your only option. The only, what I was alluding to in the beginning was if you know that you don't really need it, which again is that rare case, then why do it? That's all. All right. So what about the category of chalashim of ebo sakana? So, all right, we mentioned one thing is fever, but fever is really not the definition, right? Because, again, most of the time, I think fevers are going to head more towards sakana. Right? You're going to have to really know what you're doing if you're going to call a fever not a sakana. Right? Or you're going to have experienced fever many times in a certain setting or something like that. However, what is the definition? So if you look at pages 3 and 4, we see the classic definition. Where does it come from? Just thought this would be interesting. Everybody always throws it out. We know that what makes you a chol sheish b'sakana, aim b'sakana, two things. One is that if it's nafal l'mishka, that it's so bad, the illness or your feeling of sickness, that you have to lie down. That's going to be one definitive criteria. And the other one is that it's affecting kol gufo, that it's a systemic type illness. It's affecting you all over. It's not just an isolated headache, an isolated cold, an isolated sore throat, but it's really a pervasive sense of illness. So that comes from the Ran and the Magid Mishnah, basically the Rishonim, that I think are the first ones, as far as I know, that introduced that idea. If you go through the Gemara, there's about 10 Gemaras that deal with the Chol Hashem B'Sakana in different ways. It's what makes the whole Psak, we'll see in a moment, very confusing. We'll see why there's four Shitas Rishonim on exactly how to handle Chol Hashem B'Sakana. How did it get like that? It's because all these different sugyas, it's an amazing thing to attempt. I recommend it if you have like a summer or something, to try and attempt to work through all the sugyas B'in and then get your own conclusion, right? Because it's a very challenging and daunting thing to do, to make everything fit in just right. We'll see a little bit. We'll have a microcosm of it in a moment. But two of the main makaris that we're going to be interested in again is this Ran and that Magid Mishnah. So that's why I wanted to have it out here in the beginning. But they give us the early definition, right? We're just talking about categorization. We're not talking about Psak Halacha yet. So the first two things are those two things. Then if you turn past the Rambam page to page 5, Shmir Shabbos comes in very handy again, and he gives us a nice list, which I'm going to add to a little. Here's his Dinei Chol Hashem B'Sakana list. So who's on that list? So right away, these first two, Misha Nafal Mishkav, right? And then Gimel, Hasovo Mikeev Ad Shenichlash Kol Gufa. So those two for sure, nobody's going to argue on that. We're going to have to modify them a little. We'll see Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rosh Hashulchan adds to that a little. It's not going to be absolute. There's going to be some flexibility on those. But those two are definitely there. What's Beis? Beis is our friend, the Chom. Right? Again, stressing, it's got to be a Chom that's not a Sakana. Any Chom that you've decided is not a Sakana is certainly not a Michash Pa'alma. It certainly is a Chol Sheim HaSakana. What else is in this group? Dalit. Dalit is very important. Here's the one a lot of people mess up on. Hamishalech Kabari. Person is just walking around. He's fine. Looks healthy. He's not needing to lie down. He doesn't feel like he needs to lie down. However, Alu Lipa Lemishkav. If we don't take care of what's bothering him now, the early signs, he's going to end up as a Chol Hashem B'Sakana minimally, right? So that would be those chronic illnesses. Those are the typical cases like this, right? Anyone who Chas V'Shalom has asthma knows it. There's a prelude to asthma, right? Where you look fine, you feel fine, anyone else would be fine, but because of your history, you're categorized differently. So two people who look exactly the same, one's going to be a Chol Hashem B'Sakana, one actually will be a Chol Hashem B'Sakana. You can envision that scenario. Just to cheat a little, I'll sprint ahead to one of the cases to illustrate this. Let's say the fungal rash case, right? Let's say you have a fungus on the skin. So that's a michash ba'alma in anyone, hopefully anyone in this room. Fungus rash is nothing. You could skip a day of treatment. It's not going to make a difference. It takes weeks to treat them, months to treat them. It's a big pain. What about if it's a little baby? That's common, right? Little baby under the age of 3. So we're going to see on this list, automatically, a katan who's under 3, and we're going to define katan much more in detail. Katan is also one of these areas that just the achronim, the contemporary postgame, went to town on. But we'll see, everyone's going to agree at least on the 2 to 3 year old katan, that individual is a chol she'ein b'sakana. And so the same exact rash in that katan is going to give you a lot more leeway, a lot more you can do. You certainly would not be able to treat berefuah, the adult or the healthy person, with the fungal rash, but this baby, no problem. No problem to treat the fungus of the baby, even though we're not worried about a sakana or anything like that, but automatically is a chol hashem b'sakana, where refuah is mutter, and we'll talk about what else is mutter. What about an immunocompromised person? So an immunocompromised person, the reason I'm mentioning this is not because I anticipate, chas v'shalom, that any of you should be likely to encounter immunocompromised people, but it's to illustrate that if you're ever posketing a shiloh like this or getting involved in it, even though you're not a doctor, it's going to be very important for you to give a proper psak to know the background of the person you're dealing with. Because should you hear that they are an immunocompromised person or something analogous to that, it's very relevant to the psak, changes the whole flavor, and the little fungal rash on that person is actually makes him achola sheyesh bo sakana. Right? So he would be able to, you know, be have anything that's necessary done to him in order to treat that condition.
Is that something that the rav should ask them? Are they immunocompromised?
Well, no, that's a very unusual question to ask somebody, you know, in a stomp situation. I use that by way of illustration just because the fungus fit in very conveniently. Now, I think a more common issue would be like this. A rav is going to be asked this person is feeling a little cold coming on, right? And is it okay for me to treat my cold? So there's two ways of handling that. You could say, okay, that's michash ba'alma. You can't take refuah, forget it. Or you could say, well, is there any reason that I should believe that this cold will be dangerous to you? That I would ask. Because they'll say, well, you know, I'm an asthmatic, and the last four times I had this cold, I ended up in the emergency room with, an IV and an intubated or something, and I'd say, oh, okay, yeah, take the medicine, no problem. Right? In other words, that's an exaggeration, but the case is not. And the advisability of the full context of a situation, that I would certainly think is very advisable. What many rabbanim do, and I'll talk from personal experience, is they get a doctor involved when they can. Right? If you have a handy-dandy doctor available in the neighborhood, you grab them, and I recommend doing this. I mean, we have to justify these people going into medicine somehow, right? So get them involved in Shem Shemayim and get them involved in these cases, 100%. All right. What else is on this list? So, I don't know why, but the Shmir Shabbos chooses to put Sakanas Eva right in the middle of this list. So obviously, hey, there it is. Just for identification purposes of Makoros. So hey is the Sakanas Eva. If you see right below it, to the left a little, the Ksos HaShulchan, here's where the Ksos HaShulchan says, is it's a functional issue. It's not that it's got to be Ibud HaEver LeGamre, Ela Afilo HaSakana SheEver Yishar Chalash Kol Yamav. Right? Any kind of permanent, I didn't emphasize that before, any kind of permanent functional loss. A temporary functional loss is not a Sakana Saver. Right? There's plenty of scenarios like that. That would not be a Sakana Saver. Might be a Cholosh Yimbo Sakana, but it's not going to be a Sakana Saver. Sakana Saver has to have permanency to it. It doesn't have to have permanent total loss, but it has to have at least permanent functional loss. Rosh Shlomo Zalman and the Aruch HaShulchan throw in something very interesting. They were concerned that people were going to be too precise in their categorization, that if a person is not nafal a mishkav mamish, that he's not a cholosh yimbo sakana. So they offered two little additional modifications of that din. He says like this. It's interesting. They're coming sort of from opposite extremes. The Aruch HaShulchan says like this. You know, there are people, and I'm thinking of my mother right now. My mother is an individual, Baruch Hashem. She's married to a doctor. She has three children that are doctors. Her brother's a doctor. She's like surrounded by doctors. So what did that do to her? She will never admit that she's ill or ever go to a doctor. Right? Baruch Hashem. That's her attitude. And she's completely stoic, this is the real point, to any type of discomfort. So comes along with the Aruch HaShulchan and he says, look, just because you're a stoic, meaning you can take pain and you're able to push through, right? You're not the Nafal HaMishkav. You're like this unbelievable person. But you have the same machla that normal people, I mean, not that my mother's not normal, I shouldn't say that. She sometimes listens to these. If you're like the average person who would be lying in bed because of a certain type of pain or a certain degree of illness, that type of illness or that degree of pain, even if you're stoic yourself and you can fight it, you're still a cholosh yimbo sakana. So this is for all very, I've seen this, I've encountered this. People, Baruch Hashem, tzaddikim, right? That's what Klal Yisrael are full of, and they want to undercategorize themselves. They want to lower their category by themselves. So what they're going to do is they won't be nafal and nishkav, so suddenly they think they're in another category. Comes the Aruch HaShulchan, he says, that's not how it works. It's the objective illness, the objective pain that's involved in this situation, that will determine where your category is, no matter how, it's not that subjective, it's not totally to that degree. We'll see subjectivity does come in, but not at the degree of something that's mamish, an illness that would fall into the category of cholosh yimbo sakana. Shlomo Zalman takes it a different way. He says like this. He says, what if you have an illness that you really find very painful? And yet, there are certain situations of pain where the person prefers to be moving, right? My memories of Camp Masorah, that's where this one comes into play. I remember a situation where, there's three types of stomach pain. When you encounter a person who's complaining about a stomach ache, So they'll present to it, from a medical perspective, three ways. There's one that is extremely severe and tender to the exam. That's the surgical emergency. Is a cholesha yesh bo sakana. Get that person to the hospital right away. I would say that if you're a masupak about somebody who's complaining about stomach pain, meaning it's not the kind of guy that's going to be calling the rov over, you have a minute, I have a shiloh for you. It's not going to be that kind of situation. It's really going to be someone who's doubled over in excruciating pain. That's what a surgical abdomen is like. It's not really one, unless, of course, it's my mother, then all bets are off. But if it's the average person, again, it's not going to be that way. Then there's a type of stomach pain with a person, and I think I'll illustrate this better. Let's say a person with a migraine. A person who has a really bad headache, a migraine headache. Sometimes their preference is, right, and this is really the one who's nafal mishkav. That's the typical nafal mishkav, is a person who has like a bad headache or a certain type of abdominal pain where they just want to be left alone, laying down in bed. And that's the way they handle themselves. And they're most comfortable. So that's either a cholesha yesh bo sakana, if it's depending on the exam, or the doubt, or often that'll just be, and that'll probably be the most common case, that'll be a cholesha ein bo sakana, if it's so severe, their stomach pain, that they need to lie down. It could be something as minor as constipation. But if it's enough to make them feel sick all over and they have to lie down, that's going to be cholesha ein bo sakana. Then there's a guy, and this is what happened to me in Masora, where I was called to see this individual, this kid. And he was a kid, not a katan that we're going to get to. So he's not clearly a cholesha ein bo sakana. And they tell me he's really sick. So I come in and I see the guy and he's like running around the bunk, you know, taking a jog. So I said, oh, he looks really sick. That was my biased initial reaction. And then as I got to talk to him, I found that his only relief was actually mamish moving around. He definitely didn't want to be nafal mishkav. The last thing he wanted to do was nafal mishkav. But the truth of the matter is, it was the way he was dealing with his pain. So the bottom line on this type of thing is, you have to talk to the person and ascertain, you know, what type of pain you're in. What Shlomo Zalman is saying, that is, ke'ev chazak, asher, hashchiva eina ozarta. There'll be certain types of pains where you're not helped by lying down. Sometimes there are some people, they're idiosyncratic, we call them people, which means quirky, for lack of a better word, who, when they have the migraine headache, they want to move around. So nafal mishkav is not a magic formula. That's what Shlomo Zalman is trying to teach us. It's not a magic formula. What really counts is the sense of illness of the person. Okay. Then what's on this list are a few extras, what we call, I've heard, let's say, Rabbi Sobolovsky, maybe he used this expression 3 weeks ago. I've heard him in scenarios that I've encountered with him. These are the freebies. Who are the freebies? So a yoledes from, let's say, the after the seventh day and onward, so 30 days, right? So the first 3 days, the chola sheyesh pasakana, super sakana, right? That you don't even listen to them. Whatever, you're going to do whatever they need. Then there's 3 days to seven, that's going to be a cholesh yesh basakana, but you listen to them. Then, we'll see the Gemara in a minute, right, Gemara Shabbos, anything from after 7 days and on up to 30, that's going to be automatically a cholesh yesh basakana no matter what. So a yoledis of that period is automatically given that status in all the heter. And then he says in ches katan, which we're going to look at in more depth, and the ones that I would throw in that are not on this list is the klal hakol cholam itzel tzina, right, that's a famous klal, we're going to see what that means and where that works out, halach l'maisa. And the one I mentioned before that should also be on this list, according to the Shmir Shabbos himself, which is a cholesh yesh bo sakana, but an ancillary need, right? The psach, let's say the Ashkenazic psach, I think it's the Ashkenazic psach, that if there's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, but he needs something, they need something that is not a direct treatment, right? And you have to be sure of this. It's a little tricky because, in other words, it doesn't mean that you're, it's only things that treat the underlying illness. If there's a psychological benefit that would help their underlying sense of recovery or ability to recover, that counts as a direct treatment. But we're talking about things that are really totally ancillary. Where it comes up the most is in drawing bloods. That's where the great Lamdasha sugis come up. There's great Tzitz Eliezer on this stuff, where he has, there's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, needs certain blood work. And then, this is very common, what doctors do is they'll throw in extra tests that have nothing to do with the immediate needs now. It's a long-term test. We could do it on Tuesday, Wednesday. We happen to be drawing the blood now, so we'll do it now. So you get into a whole shayla of marba b'shiurim, which won't get off the ground. You won't have to worry about marba b'shiurim and the connotations of that sugya, which is a very interesting sugya to do. But you can avoid it altogether if we could say that ancillary needs are mutter as much as primary needs. Because the other blood tests, even though they have nothing to do with the sakana, are an ancillary need. If everything was really mutter, like the Magid Mishnah or Avad Yosef say, then you should be able to just do it. What if you don't say that, which is what I think the Ashkenaz explanation is that we don't, then what the Shmir Shabbos does, he puts him into this category. Those ancillary needs are part of the Dine Chol Hashem Basakana. Whatever heterim we develop will apply to those cases.
I heard once Rav Shechter be Magdir Chol Hashem Basakana. I'm just wondering if you know where he got from here.
We're going to see. I think that Shechter gives a fantastic one-line precise definition of Chol Hashem Basakana. And you'll find it on page 8. We'll get there in a second. You'll see, we're going to lead right into it. Where it comes in the context of a katan. That's where Rav Shechter does it. Right? I think it's in Nikvei Atzon. I don't remember the siman yet, but you'll see it. I have it all in page 8. What about the katan? Right? So a katan is automatically, this is worth a little dwelling, because this is one of the issues that halach lemaisa people grapple with and they get all confused about. What do you do halach lemaisa when you're dealing with potential chol hashem basakana katan? And what's the kind of case? I'll tell you a very prevalent case. Kid ends up going to the hospital. I don't know, it was a safek sakana, safek whatever. For some reason, they had to go to the doctor. They had to go to the hospital by way of a nochri. You got him there. Everything's great. Checked out. He's fine. He's a bari gamor. There's nothing wrong with him. Now he wants to go home. Does he have to stay in the hospital? Stick it out like it's in the morning. He's got the full Shabbos ahead of him. Or can he somehow get home? Can he go home with Amir Lenachmer the way he came there? So we're going to learn one of the dinim of a Chol Hashem Basakana is Amir Lenachmer. So if he's really a Chol Hashem Basakana, get the taxi, take him home. And not only that, but if he's a katan enough, so he needs a parent, that's going to also be part of the needs of the Chol Hashem Basakana. You could justify, especially since just riding in the car that's going anyway, it's hard to find what the isser is, right, for a person to do that. So big ramifications here as to which one of these ketanim, in a scenario like that, I'm going to really call a katan a chol hashem basakana. Because now we don't have any health issue anymore. The only reason he's a chol hashem basakana is on the merits of being a katan. So what is the cutoff? And where does this all come from? So the primary source is, to some degree, the Ramah. Right, believe it or not the Gemara, but the Rama. So on page 6, the Rama says the following: Mutar lomar le'eno Yehudi lasos tabshil lekatan she'ein lomar lechol distam tzarchi katan kechol hashem basakan adam. Right, so he makes the statement that at least when it comes to having a nochri cook something, we can view the katan as a chol hashem basakana. So immediately the question that's grappled with is, well, what exactly? Do we really mean this? What's the mashma'ut of the Rama? What does it sound like he's saying? He's only legabe achila, or preparing of food, going to be in this makel category? Or is he saying more than that? What do you think Pashup Shad is? I'm sure you know. Just from the words of the Rama, what's the Rama mashma? The way he puts it. What? Right, why? Because he says, Stam tzarchi katan. Holy, he makes a very general statement. He makes it one that you would really assume. Nevertheless, the Achronim grapple with this a little. So if you look at the left lower hand corner, the Tzitz Eliezer, by the way, has the best, in my view, the best summary of all these shitos. He has a whole, in Siman Tesvav, in Chelek Ches, he has a nice overview of all the shitos and where they come from on what the age cutoff is for a katan. But in the middle of it, he mentions the Sefer Tehillah David. He really takes it to a natural conclusion. The fact that the Rama is talking in the context of Lasos Tavshil. He says it's Dafka that, nothing else. It's almost like a Das Yachid. We certainly passing like the Pashut Pshat in what the Rama is saying, that no, we're not saying only Legabe, the Tzrachim of eating, but just we treat him like a Chol Hashem Basakana in terms of all his needs. So what is the cutoff? Well, the food analogy is not lost completely, because in digging around and the Achronim look through different sugyas, many different sugyas that deal with the katan. A lot of them, and I would say the majority of them, stick with the eating issue as going to be the defining feature of a katan. So what you see up on top is the Aruch HaShulchan says it, Chazon Ish, the Ksos HaShulchan, and you don't see it here, but on the next page, Shlomo Zalman. They all think that when we're talking about a katan, when the Rama's talking about a katan, he's talking about a katan who is completely dependent for his eating needs on his parents, and has very particular eating needs. Not just that he's dependent on his parents for his food, but that he eats differently. He can't eat regular food. He can't handle normal food. What's the age? So all these achronim said the age is 2 to 3, 3. The oldest is 3. So this is going to become the prevalent Lefinis Daiti, because there's arguments about this. But I think this is the prevalent sheet, though, that the real definition, according to most poskim, is going to be a katan is really 3. Why is it that if you reach Mir Shabbos, says if you look on the left over there in the middle, he'll tell you, Yelid ad gil teisha ve'eser. Where do we get all the way up to 9, 10? So, the Minchas Yitzchak, he's the one who made this famous. This is where Shechter got into the Minchas Yitzchak. We'll see in a minute. But the Minchas Yitzchak said, no, I don't like this. I don't think it's the eating thing. I'm not worried about this Tosfos. It's a Tosfos that they're all quoting. I think it's a Tosfos of Chulin that deals with the age of a katan and where he's has special eating needs. He says, I think the Ikar Sugya is going to be this Yerushalmi and Yuma, where we see Ein Ma'anin is a katan Yom Kippur. What age? 9. That's going to be that fragility that's expressed. You can't fast. We see that the 9-year-old's fragile. It's an issue of fragility. And therefore, the Minchas Yitzchak says the cutoff is 9 years of age. The Shmir Shabbos went 9, 10. The Tzitzel Ezer himself, he thinks 9, 10 is too much. So he pulls in another sugya. There's another sugya about when is a stab katan is tzarech le'imo? 6. Right? That's based on a sugya where he's locked behind the door and you can break down the door on Shabbos. 6-year-old. Right? So Tzitzel Ezer paskins 6. The Minchas Yitzchak paskins 9. Shmir Shabbos says 9, 10. What do you do? You have all these opinions. So if you turn the page, so page 7, we see Rav Shlomo Zalman, he agreed with Chazon Ish and all those, and Rav Eliyashiv, and a lot of the poskim that say 2 to 3. Seems to be the prevalent sugya, prevalent approach. So Children and Halacha, very popular book. I noticed that they took the mahalach that I'm about to suggest, which is really, I think, the maskana of the Nishmas Avram as well, which is, in absolute terms, 3 is the cutoff. So automatically, don't even think about it, up to 3, katan, chalashay, masakana, end of story. What about between 3 and 10? So then it's going to be totally in the situation and in the katan. And you have to make a case-by-case judgment. There'll be some times where you should be machmir, there'll be some times where, you know, you can't just throw out this blanket cooler. This sometimes happens that, you know, everyone knows Shmir Shabbos starts off with that 9-10, that became the absolute psak. But if you look around, it doesn't seem to really be the emphasis. The emphasis is really on 3 being an absolute psak. Between 3 and 10, then it's case by case. So, for example, in the illustration I told you before, I have seen Rabbanim. I won't talk about how I would deal with it myself. It's not important. But I've seen recognized poskim take a case like the choice is the kid who's about 8, 9 years old staying in the hospital or walking home, right, about a mile or so. Right? I guess it'll depend on the weather, it'll depend on the situation as a whole. And allowing Amir al-Nachri, I've seen them, depending on all the details put together, and you got to have it case by case, they would be matir under that type of scenario. They would say, in that context, he's a chalashim basakana. The gabe staying in the hospital all day, not having arguably a meal, not having all his needs for the full day, the age certainly goes up from 3. That's for sure. You might want to, if you have a super katan, you know, who's like an amazing person, and you know it for a fact, I don't know, maybe you could be subjective there. But it'll be case by case, and the leeway is really between 3 and 10. Once you get past 10, there really isn't going to be room that anyone has a shita, I think, about a chalashim basakana that's older than that. You might get into other categories of, let's say, an old person. An older person becomes a fragile person who might be a chalashim basakana in a certain context, or a particularly weak individual. Right, but that again is getting into chronic illness and other things. We're here talking about, just strictly speaking, a healthy person who happens to be of a certain age. The final thing, Rav Shechter. So what does Rav Shechter do here? What I liked about Rav Shechter is, in the context of him, he wasn't happy with the Minchas Yitzchak. He thought that it was illegitimate to pull in the sugi from Yuma. He doesn't think that's the issue. So what does this give us an opportunity to really see beautifully Rav Shechter's definition of a Chalashim Basakan? So he says over here, the reason I don't think that the Minchas Yitzchak's age cutoff for the katan is legit is because Geder Inyan Cholashin Bosakana Le Inyan Hilchas Shabbos Hu Im Cholav O Matseva, right? Either the matzav that a person's in or the illness that he has. That's very important, right? So right away we see I used to think, I remember when I was young, I used to think cholishein basakana, by definition, meant there's some type of medical illness involved in it, right? Maybe there's an exception in a katan or something like that, but it's really that the emphasis is that Chazal were looking at a situation where there's somebody who has a medical illness. So clearly, Rosh Hechter is alluding to the fact it's not quite the case, because it's either a medical illness or the matzah of itself is one where it's monoma nitpakeid beofen normali. Now, I love his examples, by the way, when he tries to describe what is an ofen normali for a little kid, for a tinok. So he says he's not going to be able to eat normally, he's not going to be able to play normally, he'll end up hitting all his little playmates, right? But whatever it is, he's not going to behave in a normal manner. So that becomes the definition of cholishein basakana, and that's going to influence Rav Shechter, I believe. He doesn't spell out a number here, but he's defining for us where he would go with a katan. So for him, the definition of cholishein basakana katan would be one who's prevented, because of his matzav of being whatever age he is, from normal functioning on Shabbos. Now, sounds useful, but up to a point, because what we're going to see in a moment is that one of the biggest challenges is deciding who's a Michush Ba'alma and who's a Cholishein Basakana. So if I was going to borrow, which I try to do, let's say Rav Shechter's approach, so it then means that you move from Michush Ba'alma into Cholishein Basakana territory when your matzav, your tzar, your chola, whatever's affecting you, prevents you from functioning normally. So what exactly does that mean? Functioning normally in an adult or not a baby, right? Chazal made it easy for us, all these poskim, and it wasn't so easy, by the way. Because if it was so easy, we wouldn't have all that suffix about what the age is. But it's very hard to be objective about what determines functionality. Now, like I said, I had a little discussion with somebody about this. I said, well, you know, for me, I like to learn on Shabbos. I like to daven. So if I think my headache is such that I'm not able to learn the way I normally learn, like, you know, I could do Bikis, I can't do Ian. Like, where do I draw the line exactly that I consider it functioning normally? So what this individual said to me, and I'm leaving this open to question how to handle this. You know, often it's just obvious the person's very, very sick, can't function at all. But a lot of times, the tough questions, the ones that you grapple with yourself usually, is how much functionality is declared as not functioning normally. I would say probably, and according to the person I asked, whose name I'm not giving by request at this point, said, well, they would say if you can't learn at all, that's certainly not functioning normally. If you can't daven at all, that's certainly not functioning normally. So I would say that's a clear-cut criteria to use. Where else do we draw the line? You know, we'll see in a moment how machmir or mekel should you be on this issue. So I want to show you a comment from the Tzitz Eliezer that I think is relevant. Before we do it, I want to use this Rav Shechter piece. He segues into something else. So along with the katan who gets into the door through the unable to function normally is the hakol cholim itzel tzina case. And Rav Shechter mentions that as well. And then he mentions a very important nekuda again, which he emphasizes very heavily, and that is, and by the way, you don't have to wait till the tzina makes you uncomfortable. You can anticipate that it's going to. So meaning, you don't have to wait, like let's say the typical scenario will be either somebody left the air conditioning on to an incredibly low degree, it's like going, you know, it's at 50 and you're going to freeze, right? And you know that you could take it for a few minutes, but after a while you're going to be freezing. So you don't have to wait till you're freezing and say, oh, okay, I cannot function normally now. Now I'll go and turn off the air conditioner or get the nochri to turn off the air conditioner. No, you certainly have the liberty of anticipating that. And what Rav Shechter was emphasizing over here, very importantly, as we emphasized before, is this is true across the board of all classifications and all issues of cholim on Shabbos, which is anticipation is very, very significant. And however that old saying goes, a pound of, what is it? What is it? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Right, that's it.
This approach of Rav Shechter about functionality, is that assumed? Is that argued? Is he the
Ottoman? Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting. None of the poskim that we saw in the Tzitz Eliezer, if you go through that,
they
don't put it that way.
Do they disagree? Or?
Well, it's hard to tell. You know, you could say that the great common denominator is Rav Shechter, right? I was thinking about this because if you look, each one is like grappling with the katan. So they they go to any sugya in Shas that deals with the katan, you know, now is up for grabs. So, you know, a very intuitive approach, let's say, which I think the Tzitz Eliezer himself is taking, is, well, what we're assuming here is that a katan is more fragile than, and certainly Minchas Yitzchak is, right, is more fragile health-wise than an older person. So let's see the cutoffs for them. Now, can I then take it to the next step and say, well, and what am I worried about? So they're more fragile. So am I worried about them dying? No. I'm worried about them not functioning normally. See what I'm saying? Like in each one of these. And then the other one says, well, no, it's what we're interested in is the one where they need a special food or special preparation of the food. Oh, really? Well, why is that? Because the way Rav Shechter puts it is like that's part of functioning normally. It's just an example of it. So it could be like they're looking for what Rav Shechter wasn't doing, and I think they were doing, is they're looking for sugyas to pin it down with an age given in the sugya. Like either Tosfos says it, Tosfos is the one who says it by the 2-3, and the other Rishonim are the ones who say the 6. The Gemara in Yerushalmi itself says it by the 9. They each have documented case with a documented statement that this katan is special at this age. And Rav Shechter is really giving a take on entire sugya. He's giving the take on Chol She'en Bo Sakana, which probably involved, I didn't ask him, should have, would be a good thing to do. My understanding of it, just from reading the piece in Ikrei Hatzon and hearing Shirim that he's given on this topic, was that it's his understanding of the sugya, it's his understanding of Chol She'en Bo Sakana that it's really...
But in terms of the application to like even a...
Halach L'maisa.
No, to even like a gadol, not a katan. In terms of defining Chol She'en Bo
Sakana. Right, so...
Do other places talk about functionality at all?
Well, no, what does everybody talk about?
Lying down.
Right. It's Kol Gufo and lying down. Right? But you're right. I'll tell you why I like your question, because for me, we're about to see in a moment, or not in a moment, when I get to the page 11, I'm going to talk about differentiating L'maisa from a Michush Ba'alma. And to me, it's the hardest thing to do. And so, especially when it's hard to say, do I need to lie down? I don't know. I mean, am I being stoic or not being stoic? Yeah, I think I'd feel a little better if I lay down. Does that really make me a Chol She'en Bo Sakana? It gets a little vague. But if I had a functioning normally definition, which I think, well, I'll confirm it, but I do believe that it's Halach L'maisa. I do. It actually is the bottom line answer to the question. I would think that this should operate Halach L'maisa. In other words, the way he's magdir it, he says, Inyan Chol She'en Bo Sakana, he doesn't say Inyan Katan L'gabei Ma. He says, Inyan Chol She'en Bo Sakana is to be able to function normally. Is your matzav of the or the machla making you unable to do that? That's the bottom line. But it still remains vague as to what functionality is, you know, open to further definition. Okay, so if we skip a little, I just showed you on page 9 is going to be the Hakol Cholim Etzotzina issue. Rav Nevinsohl just added a little thing on the bottom. Kol Shesovo Me'akor Yoti Amaragi Eldino Kekata. So he just wanted you to realize that, you know what that means. See, he's also always, the later the Achron, the more concerned they are with sort of giving us objective criteria to make our determinations. So Rav Nevinsohl is telling you, when it comes to cold, all you need is that a person is feeling and suffering from it being colder than normal. It doesn't mean he's your mamish, like, nafal mishka because of the cold. Nothing like that at all. Has to be, I think, you're feeling uncomfortable because it's much colder than normal. We're going to treat you like a katan. We're going to treat you like a Chol She'en Bo Sakana. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Negros Moshe, he has the same psak l'kula. He's the only one. Oh, here we go. He actually does say something similar to Rav Shechter, I think. In this tshuva, which is talking about air conditioning and turning it off, in a shul, he does the Tzorach Rabim, then he does the Tzorach Yachid. So he says like this, Hinei imhu ba'ofen, it's like the third paragraph, second paragraph, imhu ba'ofen shekasha lisbo laharbe anashim, even if it's just difficult to take for many people, ha'mispalim adshe mukhrachin leilech mibes knesses afshe leikach shash choli. There's no chash choli at all. It's just something where they're feeling uncomfortable, they're suffering from it, and they wouldn't be able to function normally, which in this context is to be davening in shul, right? Then, and all you need is the miut. You don't need the whole tzibur to have to go out. That's enough to be matir l'tzarch rabim, somebody to come in and turn off the air conditioner. Then he says in the last paragraph, but even tzarch yachid, you could do it, and there he says a davar pasha. So over there he says, we don't have to look at it like a katan, right? Mitam de kol hakol cholim etzal akor. It's not the same. It's not the same. But it's not the same. But it's both mutter. In other words, like turning on heating is obviously not the same as turning off the air conditioner in terms of the malach involved, etc., etc. Lamaisa the amiru anochri is going to be mutter in either case. What's a shaila that's not so pashut? That's the psa. We definitely pass in that one. That when a person's cold, you could take care of it, whatever you need to do. The shaila becomes, the contemporary shaila is, what about turning on the air conditioner when you're hot? That, there's some that say, extrapolate out, hakol cholim itzel, something that the Gemara doesn't say, you know, chom, which is not in the Gemara, and or the Rishonim, I think, for that matter, because they were tougher back then, they took the heat better, I don't know. But bismaneinu, I think that's much more questionable whether you could do that. Page 11. So page 11 now finally gives me my michush ba'alma, final page, I hope, on categorization. Alright. And over here, so the bottom line is, all these other things that don't fit into any of the categories you mentioned, but you're still uncomfortable, that's a michush ba'alma. So it gives you a few examples, a little toothache, a little sore throat, a little headache, a little runny nose, all these things. And none of the heterim that apply to Chol Shein and Basakana are necessarily going to apply to them. They're going to be very machmir about this group. So I just wanted you to see the Tzitz Eliezer's comment. Now, one of the main issues, of course, for Michush Ba'alma, what it all comes down to is taking medication, right? So it's usher for a Michush Ba'alma to take medication. In fact, that's who the Xeru was really meant for, right? Who is the most bahul on his health? It's that person, you know, with the Michush Ba'alma. We're all hypochondriacs. We're all very sensitive about our health. That's what Chazal were worried about. We're going to go run and do some kind of Isser Deraisa if we allow you to do the refuah. So, obviously, there's a whole discussion in that sugya about batal atam, batal agzera. Do we say, you know, nowadays we're not going to be generally smashing up our medication? So, for the most part, can we assume batal atam, batal agzera, the whole issue with the dancing and the clapping and tosfos and all that? We're not going to talk about that. But what the Tzitz Eliezer does mention, he mentions that there's Rav Chaim Na again in the Ksos HaShulchan, he mentions, he thinks it's questionable how he can do this. He takes this to its natural conclusion or unnatural conclusion, according to everyone else, most of the poskim. And I think even his own maskan at the end of the piece, or maybe you shouldn't really do this, that we should say batal tam batal gzera by gzeras refuah. So the Tzitz Eliezer totally wipes that out. We're not going to do that. Still, this gzera is standing today for many reasons. First of all, there are people, especially nowadays, that crush up their little stuff. You know, nowadays with alternative medicine, if you call that medicine, I don't know. And all the other reasons for not saying batal tam batal gzera. However, he wants to throw it in as a snif lahakel for the issue that we're talking about. When it comes to, at least the gabe, the isser refuah, he thinks that people are too machmir. The lashon he uses is, umide dinenu dinon diyunenu benogea lelekichas trufos b'shabes lesh yesh ledati lizaher milahafriz b'chumros b'zeh. And he says, you know, I think people are maybe a little too machmir in themselves when it comes to deciding these cases of should I allow the refuah or not. And among his reasons for not being machmir, he throws in this idea that even though we're not going to knock to say batel tam batel exera completely, it still should be something to be considered that you're going to be ending up making a kula by unishmartim, he says. You know, legabi desinyan, and to keep it in mind. So that in a real, I have to say, you know, this is really for the hands of a posik to decide such a thing. But I know that the Tzitz Eliezer is informing me that when he decided these type of shilas, that's a nakuda that he took into account, maybe when you get to that point where you're masupak, am I functioning normally? Am I not functioning normally? And it's one of those that at least this might help lean you towards a more kula psak in that case. I am not advocating necessarily that you could do that. I'm in no position to do such a thing. All right. Any questions on categorization? How much time do I have left for the din? You said 240? 245? 240. Okay, great. We can do it. So what's the din by Chol Shein B'Sakana? So did Rabbi Sobolovsky do this? That anyone recalls. Did he go through the din of Chol Shein B'Sakana? Maybe. All right. We'll do it again, Chazara, if he did. And if he didn't, here you go. So, what does the Gemara tell me about Chol Shein B'Sakana? What is Mefurish in the Gemara? That's just always the starting point when you want to work out a complicated psak, which involves 10 different Gemaras. So, what do we know Mefurish? So, page 12. That's the first Gemara we should look at. This is the Gemara I cited before, right? Starts off talking about a Yoledes, right? And then gets to the bottom line. So this person who is between 7 and 30 days, or after 7 until 30 days, you can't be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa, aval osin al-yidei aramai, kidirav ule berei derav, ilai da'amar kol tzorchei chol anasin al-yidei aramai b'shabbos, Ukidarav Hamnuna, Tamarav Hamnuna, Dabar Sheimel Sakana, Omer Lenochriva Oser. So there you have it. Black and white, famous. We know for sure Amir Lenochri is okay. You're always safe, by the way, using Amir Lenochri. Here in America, it's easy. You live in Eretz Yisrael, which I was privileged to do for a little while. It's a whole other ballgame. I really learned the hard way. You know, I was used to all the many situations. You just run to the Nochri. Even in Teaneck, there's some Nochrim left. You find one, you get it done. Makes life so easy. Here, in the middle of Beit Shemesh, there's not that many Nochrim lying around, or even standing around. There's no Nochrim to run to. It gets much more challenging. So, is there any other options? Or, I'll give you a scenario here in America, which is very, very Nogea, Halach L'maisa. You're at home, and your kid gets up in the middle of the night, and you're not going to go over to your neighbor, the Nochri. Or, you don't have a good relationship with your neighbor, the Nochri. Right? Whatever it is, there definitely are scenarios where you don't have the option of the Amir L'Nochri. If you do, I repeat, it's the simplest, Mefurish in the Gemara, Chliyama, Mutter, B'makom, Cholashem, B'sakam. The big question becomes, where do we go from here? Is it the model? Is it the binyan av? All the rabbanon are mutter b'makom chol shem b'salkana, or is it the exception? It's the only the rabbanon. So we'll see. We get some insight from out of the 10 gemaras. I picked two to highlight. I will mention two others, but the two most useful are this one and the gemara on daf 13a, the gemara from Beit. Over there, we have the following sugya on the bottom. Ameimar Shari L'michla Eina Minochri B'Shabs. Amir said, you're allowed to have a non-Jew do michla to your eyes on Shabbos. What's michla? Michal Eina? So it's an application of some type of refuah to the eyes. There's a lot of confusion or lack of understanding of exactly what it means, which will put some suffix as to whether it's a derabanan or a deraisa, the iser. We'll see, it has tremendous ramifications for the maskana of the sugya. But I think my impression is Rov Rishonim look at it as a derabanan. It's an Issa derabanan, which is Shari al yedei Nochri. Ika da Amri Ameira Gufei Kechal Eina Minochri B'Shaps. Or he did it himself, that really doesn't add much, right? Either way, for our purposes, it doesn't add anything, but he was doing this Issa Refua, which is certainly a derabanan, which may or may not involve another Issur D'Rabbanan or Issur D'Raisa, but likely only Issur D'Rabbanan, Al Yidei Nochri. So Amar Le Rav Ashi, La Meimra, Mai Daitech, what are you doing? Why are you doing this the way you're doing it? Da Amar Ula, Berei D'Rav Ilai, Kol Tzorchei Chol Hashe Osin, Al Yidei Nochri, B'Shabbes, Be'amar Rav Amnuna, Kol Dabar Shein B'Sakan, Amar Le Nochri V'Oseh. That's what's your heter to do this? Hani Mili Hecha Delo Messiah, Messiah, Be'adei, Av Amar Ka Messiah Be'adei, Tika Amitzu Posa. That would be okay, Amir Lenochri, to do whatever you wanted to do in a normal case, but you're being Messiah here. You're contributing to the accomplishment of the refuah. So what was his response? So Amar Le, Ika Rav Zvid, Dekai Kavasech. Rav Zvid asked me the same kasha you asked me. Shani Le, Messiah ain't b'mamish. Don't worry about Messiah, it means nothing. Clear-cut impression of this sugya tells us a lot. Tells us a lot about our original issue, which is in a plain old Choleshim V'Sakana case. So what are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? What's the straightforward Pashut Pshat implication of this sugya? The Gabi, the question. Is the Gemara telling me that all the Rabbanans are Mutter when it says Amir Nochri is Mutter? Pashut Pshat? No. If all the Rabbanans are Mutter, and to do this eye application, Refu is only asur midrabanan, then what do I need the Nochri for? Right? So clearly, if you're going to hold that L'michla L'Eina is a derabanan, which Rov Rishonim do hold, there's no way you're going to come out of this saying that it's Amir L'Nochri is just an example of any derabanan and all derabanans are mutter. It becomes almost impossible. Does anyone have such a shita? Yes, there is going to be a shita. Tshuva Sarashba. One learning of the Rambam that their mom is going to say something like that. So according to that, the only way they can learn it is if Michla Leina is a Issur D'Oraisa. But that definitely is not going to be the mainstream way to go. So clearly we're seeing here that it's not open territory on the Rabbanans. There are going to be certainly some Rabbanans that are definitely Asur, But it deepens the mystery a little bit. So which ones are mutter, which ones are aser? I don't know yet. I know only Amir al-Akhri is definitely mutter. Michlal Eina seems to be definitely a derabanan, that's aser. And only mutter al-Yidainach. What's the other thing that this Gemara helps us a lot with? It gets us into the issue of Messiah. I was worried about my guy who's getting the blood drawn or doing some other Amir al-Akhri activity that involves the person directly. So now do I have to worry about if he's helping the guy? According to this Gemara, the conclusion would be no problem. Mesayeya imba mamish. We'll see if it holds up. So actually, let's do the Mesayeya issue very quickly. So this is a very famous, for people who do Yaradeya, Hilchos Nida, Hilchos Tvila, famous sugya, Lachashen Etzricha Legufa sugya, this comes up also. Gemara Makos. Gemara Makos seems to feel differently about Mesayeya. What does Gemara Makos say? It says, Tani Tana Kameh Rav Chista Echad Amakiv Echad Anikav Lokia. Both the Makiv and the Nikav gets Malkus. Really? How could that be? Amar Lei Manda Achil Tamri Parabela Loki. The guy is just the innocent guy eating the dates. He's going to get Malkus, right? How come the Nikav's getting Malkus? Isn't Olav Shimba Masa? So the Amar Chamani said the Gemara gives three answers. We're interested in the one that we passed him like the third answer. Rav Ashi Amar B'Mesayeya V'Divrei Hakol. You want to know why he gets Malkus? Because you're right, and Nikav was just sitting there doing nothing. He's not going to get Malkus. But this one's Messiah. He's leaning over. He's making it easy for the guy to cut off his pants. So what's the implication? Messiah. Yesh bo mamash. So we have a machlokis, a stira between the two sugyas. What do we? Does it count or not count? So two ways of looking at it. How can we reconcile the Gemaras? So we'll say it outside, but I'll give you the Ritva on the next page. The Ritva summarizes really the two approaches that are available to a person to make the sugya work. One way is that you say, well, what determines whether Messiah counts or not is the degree that you are participating. So that the way we'll reconcile these two sugyas when it came to the case in Shabbos, where we're saying Messiah in Bamamish, you were barely doing anything, what, blinking your eye? That's nothing. But the case by the Nikaf, that was Mamish moving your head, leaning it over, that was enough of a Messiah that you're in. So what would be the natural conclusion if this were pshat, if we paskin that that's what the bottom line is when it comes to Messiah, so my case of the guy who's drawing blood, you would be required, if you want to avoid being a Messiah to an Isser Daraisa, which is pretty bad, and you're only a Cholashim Basakana, you would have to not participate or help out in the drawing of the blood. So when he tells you to squeeze your hand, I'm sorry, I can't do that. When he tells you to put out your hand, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You gotta be totally passive. Did you ever hear of anyone doing that? No. So there must be more to the case than that. So the Ritva tells you the other option is no, the sugyas are different. What Messiah? Messiah is always defined by, you know, we're not going to look at the degree of Messiah. That's not going to be the issue. What is going to be the issue is what's going on in the context in Shabbos. What's going on in the context of Makos? What's going on by the Makos case is we're taking something that is already an Isser. What are we doing? We're just making it not just a lav, but a lav. Sheyes b'mas. So Messiah is able to do that. Messiah can't take a nothing and make it into a lav. That's what's going on in Shabbos. But it could take something that's already a lav, nikaf, and make it into a lav sheyesh b'mas. It's enough to do that. So you'll get malchus. If you look at it this way, we're good. So then it means that never in the context of Shabbos do I ever have to worry about Messiah again. Because it's never going to take my participation, which is the passive Messiah, and make me into the one who's being over on whatever the person's doing. So how do we paskin? So here, if you turn the page, it's Machlokis, Shach, and Taz in a different context. We'll just mention it very quickly. There's a din that you can't have a chatzitza when you go into the mikvah. A woman can't have a chatzitza. It's considered if there's dirt under the nails, that's chatzitza. Strictly speaking, mikra din, the nail itself, if it's clean, is not a chatzitza, but we're noheg, the Ramah points out that we're noheg, that you should cut the nails anyway. What happens if a woman forgot to cut her nails before going to the mikvah and it's Shabbos? So the Taz introduces this issue, and he says, whoa, we got a big problem. Don't just think, right, he quotes this Mordechai, who was matir on Cholamoy, to have a nochri cut the nails for the woman. He says, dafka Cholamoy, but don't think that you're going to be able to get a nochri to cut the nails on Shabbos or Yantiv. Why? So it's, first of all, it's only minog, it's not mamshin, it's not a full-fledged mitzvah, it's just a minog to do it. You can just clean out the nails. But he said more than that, the downside is tremendous, because number one, you're going to have to be Messiah, and you're going to be Messiah on a Issa d'Oraisa. Cutting the nails, this is deraisa. So you're going to be practically doing, if you have a nochri come to cut the woman's nails, she's going to be over in an isur deraisa, malacha deraisa, for the purpose of this minhag. So he says, don't do it. Comes along Shach in the Kuzal Kesev, and he attacks it from multiple angles, right? He says, whoa, 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 and all these sugyas, he has a difference of opinion. We're just concerned with two of them. He says, first of all, to cut the nails is not a malacha deraisa, right? There's no tzarech b'nails, and we're not doing it for the purpose even of beautifying the woman. She's doing it as a means of being mati her to go into the mikvah. So it's a malacha shenei tzuchah l'gufa. But he says, forget about that. Even if it wasn't that, your whole mesayeh argument is wrong. Because this is, mesayeh is imba mamish. And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos. And he says, we see clearly that over there, from that sugya, the mesayeh imba mamish. And don't tell me about the sugya in Makos, because it's very different. That has to do with making something that's a lav into lav sheyesh b'masa, etc. So we see the machlokes in within the two shittos in the Ritva, lagabe, that whole issue of mesayeh comes out to be a psak, shach, a machlokes shach against the taz. And if you look at the next page, just quickly, in the Bnei Shulchan clearly shows you that we paskin like the shach. So at the end of the day, we do have a nice neat psak when it comes to mesayeh. It's a lot of interesting Torah to go through. Couldn't help myself, but the lach lemaisa that's important at the end of the day is we don't have to worry about mesayeh. Okay, good. What about our real question? What about
what would be the deraisa of putting stuff in your eye?
What would be potentially? It could be that it's not itself a deraisa, but it's at least it's a high level lach derabanan that's karav to deraisa. What's suggested, say the Beis Yosef has, we'll see in a moment, in the Kesef Mishnah, it's kosev. It's called kosev because it was like some kind of blue type of dye or something that they were putting on it.
Okay.
That's one possibility. The other one would be memareach. If it's an ointment and you're smoothing it out, maybe it's the rice of memareach. I'll tell you the truth. I am clueless as to what it is. I really have no idea. But I just know that the only way you can come out of this and say, like the Chuvas Rashba says, and some people want to learn the Rambam, that it's all the Rabbanan Zamutter. The only way you can make sense of this Gemara is if somehow it's a deraisa. But I agree with you. I'm struggling to give you an answer. The closest I got was that statement of the Kesef Mishnah, which is the one which you have in the thing. All right, so but let's come back to the essential issue. So what the Rabbanan Zamutter, because this is going to be really important. How far can I go from my Chalashim Basakana beyond the Namira Lenachri, right? So here we have in front of you all the Shitas Arishanim. So the Ran is the one who jumps on Pashut Pshat, like we were saying before. He says, look, Kochel se'anayim, that's the Rabbana. Hamir l'nochri is necessary. That tells me clearly, end of story. The Ran says, there's only one Durabanan you could do for Chol Shema Sakana. Hamir l'nochri. All other Durabanans, aser. We don't pass in that way. Comes along the Rambam. The Rambam says the following. Chol Shema Sakana, osin lo kol tzarachav al yidei goy. That's the easy part. Everybody agrees to that. Ketzad, so he says, he goes through all these different Isurei daraisa that you can do ayde goy, bishul, afia, hotzah, and he throws in this v'kein kochel einav mina goy b'shabbos. So, he's putting it on the list. Is he putting it on the daraisa list? I don't know. Could be. I thought about that for a moment. I'm not sure. The Magid Mishnah certainly doesn't look at it that way. Afal pi she'ein sham sakana. Then he makes the following statement: v'im hayu tzrichim ledvarim she'ein bahem malacha. Oh, sin also, afilu Yisrael. Ah, our first opening. The Rambam says, if you're going to do something that's not a malacha, meaning, so he either means, meaning not a issur d'oraisa, right? Or he's saying, no, the more formal understanding of what a malacha is, right? Srach malacha, right? So, machlokes kesef mishnah, magid mishnah. The magid mishnah says, the Rambam is giving you the big kula, big kula. He's telling you, basically, all the Rabbanan Zamotar. All the Rabbanan Zamotar. What's going to be a problem for the Magid Mishnah? He learns Kochel Einayim to be the Rabbanan, right? So, how could that be? So, he deals with that. He says, a new Chiddush. This is, I think, the only place I've ever seen this is in this Magid Mishnah. A new subcategory of Kol HaShem Sakana. There is no, Lamaisa, we don't pass in this way, but the Magid Mishnah introduces it. It's his only way, and he's forced to because of that sugya that we saw. He says that, you're right. There's two types of Chol HaShem HaSakana. There's a Chol HaShem HaSakana that's Kol HaGuf. That's the one the Rambam's telling you, all the Rabbanan Zamutter. When it's a Chol HaShem HaSakana of one area, that's going to be limited. That's where he has to come on to Amir Nochri for Shvus. Comes along the Beis Yosef and he says, no, I don't see it. Chasarika mina sefer. That chiluk you would expect the Rambam to kind of point out, right? A new idea about Chalashim and Sakana, two types. Beis Yosef doesn't like it at all. Bottom line is he learns the Rambam the opposite way. L'chumra, l'chumra, gadol. He learns the Rambam to be machmir even by Sakana's Aver. So he says like this, that really what the Rambam is telling you in that line about as long as it doesn't have any malacha, it's mutter, what he means is strach malacha. So that really the Rambam is telling you, you cannot do derabanan. You can do amir l'nachri, and you can do any derabanan that has no relationship to a iser malacha. What's the examples he gives of the bad ones? So kochelis einayim is a bad one. Why? Because that's gzeris refuah. That's an incredibly dramatic thing to say. We're going to be looking in a few moments that the gzeris refuah is one of the most makil gzeris around. We're going to allow that b'makom cholashim mizakana. Over here, he's telling me no. That's the Rambam's telling you that something that's refuah gzera mishum sechichas samamanim has fears of being over on a malacha daraisa. Therefore, in that context, we're going to need amir l'nachri to be along with it, even though it's only asami derabanan. And then, you know, he has this take on the Rambam, which is not so much better than the Magen Mishnah. At the end of the day, very difficult. Anyway, you slice it, kedarko, the Rambam is always very difficult to come to an absolute conclusion when he's writing cryptic statements. But it doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? Because we don't pass him like the Rambam, we don't pass him like the Rambam, we don't pass him like the Rashba, we don't pass him like the Magen Mishnah, we pass him like whom? The Rambam. Torah Sa'adam, right over here. What does the Ramban say? You would have thought, relief. It's really simpler than we thought. The end is near. He says the following. He says, what do you do for a Cholashim Basakana? Amir Laramai. Good. Amir Lanachri, everybody knows that. But then he throws in something else. V'chein yitiru bo shvus de malacha hanasis b'shinoi. Something new, finally. He says there's another het there. And he finds a Gemara for this. Anyone know the Gemara? What Gemara tells you that the makom chola, I will be matir something al yidei shinoi. You know? Which one? Shabbos? Shabbos case?
Oh,
right. In other words, where is there a case? What Gemara gives me an example of where b'shinoi I see for a chola she'ein bo sakana a matir. Shinoi in some context. I'm purposely saying some context because what's vague is he's telling me a shinoi on a derabanan or shinoi on a deraisa. And of course, that's a tremendous nafkamina, right? So the Gemara that he's referring to, if you look, he brings this, he has it in his chidushim on Avodah Zarah, in the Daf Chavches, in the sugya over there, and I think he actually mentions it over here, he hints to it, right, by Mefarik, right? Ksuvos, I think it's Daf Samach. Where there the sugya is a goneach, yonek, from a cow, right? Because that's shelo kedarko, right? A goneach is someone who is not a choshe yesh b'sakana, he just has some kind of heart problem. I found that a little funny. But, in other words, heartburn maybe. Some kind of issue that the way the Rishonim understand goneach, that is relieved by getting milk. So they allow him, they can't be mefarech, they can't do dash, which is or schita, which is an isid araisa. But if you do it kalachar yad, it seems to be okay. So that's the source for the fact that in the Mamakam Choloshim Basakana, we see that not only Amir al-Nachri is good, but something else the Gemara tells me. Shinoi. What becomes a whole to-do is what is the Ramban telling me? Now, I would have liked to have gone through the whole thing because I think you could tease out what seems to be a very compelling understanding of this Ramban, which is, I think he's mafurash in his Chidushim and Avodah Zarah this way. I don't understand the Mechaber. Because what he seems to be saying is that a shinoi even on a daraisa, the bigger chiddush. That to me is pashup shat, but who am I, right? Okay, so I'm good company. Really? So he read it that way, right? Right, so that's on the next page. But right over here, what's interesting is the Beis Yosef, the Mechaber, and I'm wondering if he was like influenced by his take on the Rambam when he gave his final psak. I don't know. He paskins like the Ramban, but he paskins like the Chumra take on the Ramban. Meaning, this becomes the Ikar Adin. And this really becomes Halach Lamaisa, no matter what anyone would think Pshat is. Halach Lamaisa of Ikar Adin is Lamaisa, what you're allowed to do for Cholashim Basakana is Amir Lanachri and Shinoi Anadurabana. That is Ve'ikar Adin, what's the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Mishnah Berurah seconds the motion. Right? If you look in the Mishnah Berurah, which is over here, you see, very comfortable with it, that's the Shita. So, wow, that would be very limiting if that was the end of it. Okay, so let's look at those quickly. I'm glad Rabbi Sulsky did that, because we don't have that much time. So, if you look to the next page, there's the Eglei Tal and the Shulchan Aruch Harav, both those Makoros, because they learned the Ramban the way Rabbi Sobolovsky did, which is that it's even on Shini Lana Daraisa. So now, and there's others. The Shmir Shah, if you look, actually, if you go to, if you skip a few pages and you go all the way to page 21, this is the famous, I call it the 17 star. It's a famous os in the Shmir Shabbos Kehelchazon, because it's this one where Rav Shlomo Zalman brings down this kula. Rav Shlomo Zalman basically says that there's all these very significant poskim that don't learn the Ramban the way the Mechaber presents it, and therefore Bishas Hadchak, which it almost always is, right, you can rely on it, which is a very significant kula. So, but we have to bear in mind, the Ikar Adin is still the Ikar Adin. The Ikar Adin is, when you can, you certainly should adhere to the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah, which is Amir Nachri on a Shvus, and a Shinoi on a Shvus. However, very often, in real life, you're going to need this other Kula, so it's very important to be aware of it. Which is that, B'Shas Atach, when you don't have a guy around, and you can't do something B'Shinoi, it's just not going to work out well, right? The IM injection Bishinoi? No thank you, right? I'll take it the straight way, right? So that would be a classic example. Or many other things like that, many medical treatments, this becomes real halacha l'maaseh importance, that better not to do it Bishinoi, and you have very strong shita to be samachan. And I'm very happy to hear, we can now say, and Rabbi Sobolovsky came right out and said that that's how he would go. He did emphasize l'chatchila not to. He was even stronger. Oh, good. Okay. He's certainly in a position to say that. I'm not. All right. He said what?
He emphasized that most of the time it is a shas v'chak.
Oh, okay. Good. So. I would agree with that. There's something else to be aware of, and that is another kula that might be useful or can help in going l'kula, and that is the chayei adam. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah in these other sections, I don't have time to read it through with you. I gave you a whole series of Mishnah Berurahs. The ones, I don't know if I didn't mark them off. But Sif Katan Kuf Aleph on page 15. Take a look at that, and take a look at Rav Nevensol, his comments on the bottom. And if you take a look, Kuf Chaf Aleph on page 16, and the Bir Halacha over there. So you get introduced. Oh, here's a great way to do this briefly. On page 18, Chayei Adam throws in something that's really, really nice. Because the Ramah in these... Seifim, the Shulchan Aruch, paskin something that we haven't said yet, right? What do we know mafurish? What do we know for sure now? We know that we could do for Chalashim B'Sakana, we could certainly do Amir Nachu. We know we could do Shinoi, even on Dorais, B'Shas Adchaka, if you want to play that out. Certainly on a Durabanan, you could do Shinoi, all that's great. What about Gzeres Refuah? Have we mentioned that the Gzera, the Yisra Durabanan of Gzeres Refuah is Mutter by Chalashim B'Sakana yet? No. But the Ramah does. The Ramah does it several places. In all those sifim I gave you. What's interesting is the Mishnah Berurah is sensitive to the fact that contradicts what the Mishnah Berurah himself said when he was paskening the Chumra back on our original statement on the Ramban. He says, we paskening like the Ramban, and you're never going to do a Darabanan other than a Shvus to Shvus type situation. You're never going to do a Shinoi. You're never going to do a Darabanan without a Shinoi. So then we have the Ramah paskening Gzeres Refuah, no Shinoi necessary. The Mishnah Berurah gives two. As he brings up the stira, he says, yeah, this is a problem for me, because I told you, we're never letting you do a Durabana without a Shinoi. So what's going on over here? So sometimes he says the following. Sometimes he says, you'll see the stira within the Mishnah Berurah, Nevensol points it out, and you don't have to call it a stira, you could say he's holding by both. But the Mishnah Berurah will pass him like this. He says, well, you know what it is? The Gzeres Refuah, and here's the opposite of what I was talking about with the Kesef Mishnah before. The Gzeres Refuah is like such a low-level Durabana. It's the lowest low level of Rabbanan there is. You know, it's almost like he's saying Batlatam, he's not saying Batlatam, Batlatam, Gzerah. He's certainly looking at it as a very flimsy sort of Gzerah. So he says, therefore, we're Mekel. You know, it's such a low level of Rabbanan. That would be the rationale. Alternatively, he quotes the Chayyadam. What does the Chayyadam say? So if you look, Yud Beis, he says that Yesh Matirin Aval Das Rova Poskim Da Asur Ela Yaseno Ayadei Shinoi V'chen Nira Li. Right? He's talking about a Din Derabanan. It's mutter to do with Derabanan Yisrael B'Yadayim B'Cholashim B'Sakana. However, it's better to do it Ayadei Shinoi V'chen Nira Li. Right? That's like the Chumra Psak. V'im E'ef Shal Ayadei Shinoi V'lo Ayadei Akum Mutter Lassos Kedar Kokain. So he's saying, you know what it is? You know what the reason why the Gzeris Refuah, it's mutter, the Mishnah Berurah is alluding to? Because of this rationale. That it's an example of how do you do Refuah B'Shinoi, right? It's oral medication is going to be very difficult. I don't know what, you know, it's hard to come up with one. So maybe that's it's a circumstance. There is no such thing. What's really important is this allows, potentially, for the extrapolation out to the Chaya Adam's Psak, that b'makom where I can't do it b'shino and I can't do it ayidei nachri, and it's some issur d'rabbanan, I can do it b'makom chol. All right. So, do we paskin that way? Does that thing surface in a contemporary psak? So, if we go ahead to that page again, page 21, you'll see Shmiras Shabbos brings up both of these kulas, not only the famous Yud Zayin star. But he even says on top, "Im ef shal shnos me'aragli yaseno ayidei nachri rakim ein nachri yaseno yudi af bli shinoi." So you could be a circumstance as long as it's only an issur rabbanan, right? At the end of the day, push comes to shove, that you'll be in a shas atchak where you'll be relying on this degree of kula. That really, what the Rashba was saying, the Chuvas Rashba was saying all along, and what some learned the Rambam was saying all along, that all the rabbanans are mutter legabe. This one, I don't think Rabbi Sobolsky would be that fast to say all the Rabbanans are automatically mutter. There's one Derabbanan that's particularly, probably, almost the Chuli Alma Aser. Anyone know what that is? What Derabbanan you're never going to get to do in a Cholashim HaSakana, just straight up. So the Sugi in the Gemara is putting out the light so the Chola can sleep. Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Right? Malacha Sheinah Tzrich L'Gufa, we're going to be pretty machmir about. That's one where certainly B'makom Sakanas Eiver, where we're going to be matir up front, all Isurei Derabanan. Right? That's the psak by Sakanas Eiver. You don't have to go through all the manipulations and the psak of the Ramban and all this. By Sakanas Eiver, the din is you can't do a Daraisa, even though there is certain Rishonim that actually said Sakanas Eiver, you can do Daraisa, right? Which becomes part of a Snif Lahakel in certain circumstances. There's a Meiri that says it, there's a Sridei Eish that says it. Rav Shechta has an article on that where he's very unhappy with that whole Mahalach also. He doesn't like that that approach by Sakana Sever. And the upshot is, Lechatchila Sakana Sever, you cannot do any of the Raises, but you can do all the Rabbanans, including Malacha Shenetzricha Lagufa will be more Meikil. That's what Rosh Zaman says. However, Chol Sheimba Sakana, we draw the line on all these Kulas when it comes to Malacha Shenetzricha Lagufa, we're much more Machmir. The final thing in the handout, and we'll have 2 minutes to go through all 15 cases really fast, is I wanted to make sure that everybody realized what's a shinoi. So we're going to be seeing, most of the time, practically speaking, you're going to be doing a lot of things with the shinoi, right? There's many things you can do with the shinoi, and we see lechatchila, if you can do it with the shinoi, do it with the shinoi, even if it's an issur derabanan. So what's a shinoi, what's not a shinoi? So what we get out of these very famous makoros over here, this Egli Tal is very famous, right? Almost anyone who learned Shabbos learns this Egli Tal, and defining that Mechaz Machshavos tells me that it's not just the outcome that counts, it's the methodology, right? So it's a very important Egli Tal to look at that, meaning Lakula, since Mechaz Machshavos, so we could say even if you're going to come out with a great result, that doesn't stop it from being done Bishinoi. As long as your methodology is Bishinoi, that will count. But what counts is a Mishuna method, so it's going to be very Malacha dependent, right? So, for example, you can't just say across the board, if I'm a righty, I do everything with my left hand, and all malachos, that's going to be shinoi? No. Right? This Chaya Adam emphasizes that, really, if it says, let's say, carrying. So, we know Mefurish in the Mishnah that's on the top of this page, right, left, carrying is not going to be a shinoi. What about writing? Yes. Right? Baksiva would be. What about flipping a light switch, which is something that comes into play in many of these shilas? No way. Right? Right, left, just as effective. Right? Not only the outcome, the methodology. So what would be a shinoi by a light switch? So elbow, right? I read a sefer, this was really something. What about plugging in a device? Like I had a situation where I had somebody who was, I would say, choleshiyish basakana. However, as I'm sure you learned, Rabbi Sobolovsky, it's not like all things are mutter b'makom choleshiyish basakana, right? If there's a stable choleshiyish basakana and you have time, you should still minimize, right? So I had to do a ultrasound on a choleshiyish basakana, and I remember I was in this position. Normally, I had this guy. I had this very nice Saudi Arabian individual who volunteered to be my Shabbos guy. It was the greatest thing that ever happened. See, some of them are really nice. And he was unavailable. So for the first time in my life, I had to think about, I have to plug this machine in. And I'm thinking, how should I do it? Should I do it Bishinoi? How am I going to do it Bishinoi? So I said, okay, I'll do it Bishinoi. Why not? So I thought a Shinoi would be, I don't know, like I held it like with my wrist. I held it with my elbow. I read this contemporary medical Shabbos sefer that said to do it with your teeth. I don't know if that's like the advisable way to do it. So I wanted to just go on the record as saying, like, even though you'll find that in the English literature, I'm not sure that's an advisable way to do things. So better to find a much more down-to-earth Shinoi than that one. But all right, okay, we'll stop with this because it is time's up. I'm very sorry I didn't get back to those cases, but I'm sure the answers are now obvious. But anyone who wants to discuss any of them with me in any serious way, I'm very happy to do it at any time.